On May 20th, the US Senate unanimously passed the Holding Foreign Companies Accountable Act, a bill that threatens to delist from US stock exchanges foreign companies that use accounting firms that cannot be inspected by US regulators. Although the bill's provisions apply globally, some apply especially to Chinese companies. I'm Vincent Chow, a reporter at China Law and Practice and host of the China Law Podcast, a weekly podcast exploring China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. With me today to discuss US efforts to ramp up scrutiny of the books of US-listed Chinese companies is Sean Wu, a Hong Kong-based partner at Paul Hastings. Sean leads the firm's investigations in white-collar defense and international litigation practices in Greater China, representing multinational corporations in high-stakes investigations and regulatory enforcement across the Asia-Pacific. In this episode, Sean shares insights on the accounting concerns that the US regulators have regarding Chinese companies, how the new proposed law works, the uncertainty surrounding its enforcement, as well as practical advice for Chinese companies in light of growing US scrutiny. Sean, welcome to the China Law Podcast.
No, my pleasure.
So Sean, what are the driving factors behind the US regulators' growing scrutiny on US-listed Chinese companies?
I think number one, it doesn't have to be exclusive to Chinese. The same issues, accounting irregularities could, exist in companies from any country, right? India, Korea, Japan, etc. But I feel that Chinese companies are being picked out and targeted. And one reason for that is because of the sheer pace and speed of its growth in the past 5 to 10 years. We see a lot of Chinese technology companies, a lot of Chinese fintech companies, cyber companies, companies that have used big data and online platforms seek finance in the US. And let's not forget that a lot of these companies were really just startups, right? 5 to 10 years ago. They don't have the kind of institutional compliance or the type of institutional best practices that you would expect of a large, multinational company. But these companies are growing. They've got great vision. They've got a great business proposition. They're expanding rapidly. And I think if we compare various countries, Chinese companies from inception to the point of listing in the US have only taken a couple of years. Now, that's fine and good for its business proposition, for its investors, and for listing. But from a regulatory compliance standpoint, right, from a accounting, even anti-corruption, anti-bribery, best practices standpoint, typically companies that are so young haven't seen their fair share of ups and downs or problems or issues and really haven't had the lifespan to figure out solutions to these. And so answering your question directly, Vincent, I feel that a lot of these Chinese companies are grappling with, the regulatory compliance burden of being listed in the US and the type of responses that are being expected from that. We are seeing this exacerbated by the current economic conditions and especially COVID-19. If these companies were on a upward trajectory anyway, good results keep coming in, sales revenue keeps going up, that's all fine and good. But with slowing growth, with market conditions impacted by COVID-19, we're beginning to see some of these Chinese companies experiencing financial distress, cash flow problems, shortfall. And these are really the root causes for some of the accounting problems that used to be easier to hide, but are now slowly rearing its head and beginning to surface. And I feel that with these conditions, with these financial results, with these revenue numbers, a lot of problems that might not be easy to spot are now becoming to surface, including deal falsification, right? Revenue inflation, revenue recognition. These are a lot of the cases that I handle, and I'm beginning to see a trend where, with the first couple of cases, you'd see the rest of the Chinese companies that are listed in the US right now facing increasing scrutiny, from regulators, from the Securities and Exchange Commission, in some cases, the Department of Justice, the investors, and even opportunistic short sellers that are trying to capitalize on this trend.
Let's delve into the Holding Foreign Companies Accountable Act now then. Although it doesn't necessarily target Chinese companies, most people would agree that Chinese companies listed in the US are the main targets. So can you give us a general overview of the background of this act?
Sure. I'm happy to go through the details. And I feel that, you know, whenever we look at an act, as a lawyer especially, we've got to figure out a couple of things, right? Number one, what defect is the act aimed or sort of designed to try to cure? And, you know, in order to understand the act, you've got to understand what the status quo is before the act. And I'd sort of start with this premise that foreign companies listed on the U.S. stock exchanges, you know, there are practical issues with trying to police them, practical jurisdictional issues of trying to, you know, gain access to those records. So if you take China, for example, inspections of audit firms on the mainland is very difficult. Work papers are protected. It's very difficult for the U.S. Stock exchange or regulators to try to clamp down on, you know, auditing and the like, the same way it would to a domestic U.S. company. And this sort of exacerbated by, you know, Chinese laws, you know, requirements, restrictions on the sharing of information and the like. And so the PCAOB in the U.S.
So the PCAOB is the U.S. Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, which is tasked with performing inspections of auditors of public companies.
That's right. They would run an inspection of audit firms and sort of, you know, make sure the accountants, you know, are doing their job and doing it right. And that's an important part of being listed on the stock exchange in the U.S. The Holding Foreign Companies Accountable Act is really part of a trend where the U.S. authorities, specifically the Securities and Exchange Commission, and now with this act, you know, passed by the Senate, if it becomes law, the bill would apply to Chinese companies, you know, among other companies, and require them to comply, you know, strictly with U.S. regulatory and audit standards on information sharing and the like. And, you know, where it is different, Vincent, is that it expands the enforcement authority and ability of the SEC by charging the agency to, you know, identify companies that retain, you know, registered public accounting firms, which have branches and offices located in foreign jurisdictions. You know, if previously the PCAOB was unable to inspect or investigate completely, now this act sort of gives it, you know, additional teeth. Identified company will have to certify to the SEC, you know, whether or not it is owned or controlled by a government entity in a foreign jurisdiction. You know, securities of the company would be, you know, prohibited from being traded through any other method, right, under the purview of the SEC. And there's now a huge premium on the PCAOB being able to inspect, you know, these records. And I feel that this is obviously a move for greater transparency and greater supervision. I will point out a couple of difficulties and uncertainties, which I think the market is looking at, right? I think the act is going to have a lot of, I want to say, growing pains when it comes to issuers, you know, whether or not they are non-compliant, at least for the initial period of time. It doesn't say what happens, for example, if an issuer, you know, regardless of whether it's compliant or non-compliant with the PCAOB related provisions of the bill, is able to certify whether it's state-owned or not state-owned. And frankly, other U.S. actions, you know, tightening audit requirements for Chinese companies are going to exist. They're going to come into effect. You know, NASDAQ is going to have new restrictions on IPOs, you know, with regard to, you know, post-listing market capitalization requirements. You know, the SEC is going to have more internal policies on how to clamp down on companies from emerging markets. And I feel like this is all part of a trend where, you know, increasing regulatory scrutiny is going to happen vis-a-vis Chinese companies in particular. And this is only a trend that's going to get worse.
So can you explain why it has taken so long? Because the PCAOB has been around since the 2000s, and it's their job to inspect US-listed companies' audits. So if the PCAOB has been unable to inspect the books of US-listed Chinese companies so far, why was action not taken sooner to fix this?
Yeah, I mean, I would speculate, Vincent, because I don't know the answer for sure, but I would speculate that, at least in cases that I've seen and work that I've been personally involved in, that, you know, a lot of the theoretical powers that the SEC and the PCAOB have had in the past have met with practical resistance when it comes to cross-border enforcement. Now, this is an area that is very active right now. We're talking about, you know, not just the state secrets law, but cybersecurity, data privacy, the new blocking statute, you know, with regard to criminal regulatory authorities. And so very difficult, and increasingly difficult, I want to say, for information, you know, to be made available to foreign regulatory authorities outside of China. For instance, we are seeing a lot of instances where, you know, the burden is placed on the companies that are listed to provide certain documentation and information. The auditing firms, the accounting firms are caught between a rock and a hard place with regard to what to produce. Can they produce? Are they in violation of Chinese law if they produce? And if they don't produce, what are the consequences under the U.S. you know, regulatory regime? And I know that in recent announcements, recent you know, publications, recent pronouncements, the SEC in particular is you know, ramping up its attention and scrutiny on companies that are citing local domestic laws, regulation, and provisions from preventing it from complying with U.S. regulatory supervision. And so this is sort of, I want to say, the next logical step, you know, Vincent, in sort of empowering the SEC, empowering the PCAOB with more supervisory jurisdiction over the status quo in the past, where practical impediments have come in the way.
Let's move on to the practical impact of this proposed law, starting with US-listed Chinese companies, the main protagonists of what's happening. The bill says that companies that cannot be inspected by the PCAOB for 3 consecutive years would be delisted from US stock exchanges. If this is passed, how do you think Chinese companies will respond? Is it simply a choice between complying with the US regulators or delisting?
I think every company is different. Every company is having its internal board meetings right now as we speak, and they are making this decision, yes or no, remain listed or delist, etc. My personal you know, speculation would be that this wouldn't cause a tsunami of you know, delistings or departures as yet, as everyone is still taking a bit of a wait and see approach to see, you know, how exactly is this act going to come into force, and what the you know, the real practical implications are. Because at the end of the day, if this is theoretical power that's being granted, but there isn't a lot of evidence to show that this is really necessarily going to lead to increased enforcement against Chinese companies, then that's sort of something to keep at the back of your mind. But does it create a immediate impact on you know, continuing the listing and raising finance and capital with investors in the US? Not necessarily. But if we sort of take this to its logical conclusion, right, and in the scenario where the SEC becomes very hawkish, the PCAOB and other agencies in the US are really clamping down on Chinese companies in particular, I think we might see the beginning of one or two test cases where Chinese companies are being targeted by the enforcement authorities in the US, and they are being subject to a high level of scrutiny never seen before. That would be, I think, the turning point where every other Chinese company listed in the US, I think that's going to be part of their to leave or not to leave decision tree. Because right now, I can say that, you know, anecdotally, I think the trend is for companies to consider secondary listings in Hong Kong in particular, but elsewhere. And we're seeing a couple of examples of these in the press. But are they going to necessarily delist you know, immediately? I don't think so. I think it's more of a wait and see approach, Vincent.
You mentioned Hong Kong there. Hong Kong is going to benefit a lot from what's happening, right?
Yeah, for sure, Vincent. You know, I spent a lot of time in Hong Kong, and I know that, you know, by some measures, Hong Kong is already the largest by volume and value stock exchange from an IPO standpoint, you know, year by year. And so, you know, I think we have to accept it for what it is, right? It's not a second choice. It's not a substitute. It's in its of itself, you know, a very heavyweight option for Chinese companies trying to raise capital. I guess the difference really is in, you know, sort of from a strategic standpoint for some of these companies, how do they want to raise capital? Where do they want to raise capital? And what kind of investors, you know, they are looking at. Because, you know, in a lot of ways, listing in the US and listing in Hong Kong, you know, has a lot of similarities, right? You get access to, you know, foreign currencies, you get access to, you know, a very big market, very liquid, all very good options. I guess the difference and the main difference, Vincent, is really in the kind of regulatory scrutiny and how that's gonna, you know, very, you know, influence in a very big way, you know, these companies' you know, and their listings, because as we can see, there is a trend of escalating regulatory scrutiny for Chinese companies listed in the U.S., you know, brought about by long-arm jurisdiction-type laws and statutes in the U.S., you know, aggressive positions and approaches taken by the U.S. regulatory agencies. There are also laws and regulations and agencies out here in Hong Kong, but we haven't seen as much, you know, activity when it comes to enforcement, and definitely not one that sort of prioritizes or targets, you know, mainland Chinese companies over companies from any other countries. And so I feel that from a business-friendly standpoint, we are going to see more mainland Chinese companies consider Hong Kong, you know, do a secondary listing in Hong Kong. You know, companies that have not yet gone for a primary listing are going to consider Hong Kong more favorably. You know, and the statistics, the figures, the facts will speak for themselves. But, you know, I feel that we are not yet at a tipping point. That may change later this year, Vincent. Nobody knows. But when, as and when, and if and when that moment comes, where the regulatory scrutiny, you know, sort of rises to a level where, you know, lawyers like myself would be called into picture and defend companies that are being, you know, subject to scrutiny and enforcement action, I think that's when the decision is going to be made for companies to consider not only the attractiveness of raising capital and finance, but also the defensive posture vis-a-vis a foreign enforcement agency.
How should U.S.-listed Chinese companies prepare in the meantime then? As you said before, there's tightening of screws happening in different areas separate from this proposed law, all part of this bigger trend. So what is your advice for these Chinese companies now, regardless of whether this bill becomes law?
And so I think this sort of loops back to the, you know, one of the introductory points I was making, in that, you know, Chinese companies are unique in the sense that they, a lot of these companies that are listed really accomplish a listing in a very short amount of time. You know, in most countries and in most periods of time in history, you know, that has typically taken decades. But in the past 5 to 10 years, we're looking at Chinese companies doing this within years, you know, literally. And so the corollary of that is that, you know, issues like compliance, you know, accounting integrity, anti-bribery, anti-corruption, you know, money laundering, you know, financial controls, issues like that are only beginning to be tested. And so to your question, Vincent, I feel that, you know, a lot of cases that I handle, I'm typically advising these companies and their boards of directors and their audit committees to focus on a couple of things. Number one, to make sure that regular accounting, auditing processes are being carried out and being carried out properly and fully. And the reason for this is because, especially if the posture that the U.S. regulatory authorities are taking right now, you don't want to give them, you know, any excuse or avenue or opportunity to sort of commence a full-blown investigation or enforcement action against the company. You know, if you identify any issues, any irregularities, it doesn't necessarily have to be malicious or out of proportion, but if there were any issues that you can identify in a routine audit check, you know, surface that, you know, deal with it head on as quickly as possible. That sort of open and transparent corporate governance that I highly encourage. The other side of things I would sort of recommend are, you know, focusing a lot on internal reviews. If there are whistleblower allegations that are being made, you know, as to, you know, what's going on in the company, you know, falsified deals, you know, financial irregularities, make sure that it's surfaced, you know, quickly, promptly, and accurately to, you know, personnel, you know, executives that are tasked with looking into this, and where appropriate, bring in outside counsel like myself.
And what about advice for U.S. or foreign investors in these companies?
I feel that one of the beauties of the stock exchanges in the U.S. is really sort of the level of information that's available on a lot of these companies. You know, you get the good and the bad, right? You get the enhanced regulatory scrutiny on Chinese companies, but all companies really listed in the U.S. And there's a lot of information for investors to look at. You know, obviously, you know, investors already take a look at the annual reports, you know, the SEC filings. And so that is all there for a reason. It's for the protection of the investor. And I feel that a lot of investors, again, in different categories and different types, some tend to favor startup companies, right? Companies that have had a shorter track record, but have unlimited potential. And I feel like, you take the upside with a certain level of risk, and for certain investors, they tend to favor more of its track record, its decades of a, tried and tested proven business model. And that obviously has its own calibration for risk and reward as well. But, it's really sort of enforcement lawyers, white collar investigation lawyers, forensic accountants, auditors, everyone has a role and a part to play in the system. And, as it trends towards more openness and transparency, ultimately, this is good for the business community. It's more certainty. It's easier for investors to make business decisions and investment decisions. I welcome sort of, companies, investors, management, focusing more on compliance and disclosures, and really being a part of this community, globally, throughout the world, as we focus on good corporate governance.
Thank you, Sean, so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me to be on this podcast today, Vincent.
And thank you for listening to the China Law Podcast, a weekly discussion of China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. Make sure to check out our website, chinalawandpractice.com, to keep up to date with the latest US-China legal and business news through our in-depth analyses, including contributions from our network of leading lawyers and in-house counsel, as well as full access to a searchable database of English full translations of PRC legislation going back 33 years. Stay tuned, and thanks again for listening.